Log Talk Radio.
Welcome to the PW Torch Livecast. I am Wade Keller, and this is Interview Thursday, on Thursday, May 25th, 2017. And my guest on today's program, momentarily, will be Stone Cold Steve Austin. And we're going to talk about Backlash on Sunday, NXT TakeOver on Saturday. And also, I want to go back 20 years ago and look at what happened 20 years ago on Monday Night Raw. It was a big week with Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels in a tag team, including an angle on Raw 20 years ago this week that resembles a little bit of what happened with Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns as they've been building up the Fatal Five Way. So it's going to be a fun comparison about two different eras, but it's pro wrestling, so we see a lot of the same. Some of the same disputes between friends, we'll say, in pro wrestling. I am here 4 days a week, Monday night after Raw, Tuesday night after SmackDown, Wednesday with the midweek flagship with a guest co-host where we talk about a wide array of issues, and then Thursday is Interview Thursday. Next Thursday, just incredible. PJ Polacco joins me, and we're going to talk about Extreme Rules. We're going to preview the show, but talk about the history of gimmick matches in Just Incredible's career, in particular, his time on top in ECW and part of other companies that he's been in. And we'll talk about how wrestlers prepare for gimmick matches differently than a regular match, which gimmick matches he likes and doesn't like, and why. That is on tap live next Thursday. And then the following Thursday, we have scheduled Alex Greenfield, ex-creative team member, one of my favorite ex-creative team members. I have a lot of those, but he's always a great guest. And 2 weeks from today, he's scheduled to join me on Interview Thursday to talk about his thoughts on the current state of wrestling and his days working behind the scenes in WWE. We always enjoy our conversations with the ex-creative team members, sharing their insights and observations and thoughts on their time in WWE. But subscribe to this show if you don't already on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever it is that you listen to podcasts. We are here with six fresh shows per week, four of them that I host Monday through Thursday. And we very much appreciate those of you who take time to give us a five-star rating in iTunes or Stitcher and leave some kind comments about what it is about this show that you like to help people who are shopping for a pro wrestling podcast that fits what they're looking for understand what they get when they listen to this show. So I know I go to reviews when I'm looking for podcasts and products, and it is the users or the customers of that product that can help me decide. And you can help people who have not listened to our show yet understand why you're a listener and why they should give us a shot. So we really appreciate those of you who do that when you go to iTunes. I think I've got Steve online here. Steve, is this you?
You're damn right you got me on a damn phone. Come on, Wade. Get this thing in gear.
How you doing, Steve? Good to talk to you.
I'm outstanding. I was listening to some real snazzy music while I was on hold for about 15 minutes. Good to talk to you. Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
Sometimes I just call 800 numbers just to listen to the hold music when I'm, you know, looking for a little mood boost.
I was digging it.
Cool. Good. How are things going? How's life?
Man, things are going good. Trying to get some soundproofing over here in my studio. I've got nothing but hardwood floor, so I've got a lot of bounce. So I'm trying to keep my voice down to not bounce my voice too much. I've got to get some carpets, but everything's going good over here. We're trying to get organized over here at 316 Gimmick Street. It's going to be a part of your show.
Very, very good. Well, you got to see a good amount of wrestling this past weekend. It was a busy weekend for WWE in particular, NXT TakeOver, and Backlash. I want to let our listeners know who are listening live that you can email us right now if you've got a question about this weekend or anything regarding Steve Austin and his career and his thoughts on the current scene and his days in wrestling. Our email address is pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. That's pwtorchlivecast@gmail.com. And in the spirit of listener participation, I'm going to kick off our conversation here with an email from Matt from Eastbourne, East Sussex, England. He says, "Hi, Wade and Steve. My quick question is, when I watched you back in the day in the ring, I would have been about 10 to 15 years old, and you were mesmerizing the way you lit up the ring with your fire on a comeback or running to the ring. I know you already told Dean Ambrose to do this, but my question is, do you see that in anyone else in WWE now? Many thanks. I first joined PW Torch VIP after a Steve Austin Show podcast about 2 years ago, and we have never left."
Man, so basically, what's the question? Talking about just having fire in the ring?
Yeah, like, who do you see in wrestling, if anyone, that has what it was that you had? I mean, not exactly, not necessarily the same level or, you know, whatever, but who do you look at and go, that person kind of owns the aisle as they come to the ring, they own the ring when they get in it, they have that kind of energy?
Well, AJ Styles comes to my mind immediately. Now, he's not Stone Cold. He's not the Stone Cold character. He's the phenomenal one, AJ Styles. But when he comes down with the swagger and he starts opening up on his offense, and he's basically working in heel mode now, but that guy has a mean streak in him. He commands respect. He's got the confidence. So he jumps to mind right off the bat. I'm liking a lot of what Braun Strowman is doing. He's out right now with an injury. He's still very green, but I think that guy, he's got a mean streak in him. He has tremendous fire. He's kind of, you know, in heel territory, but as he keeps developing, I think the sky's the limit for that guy. Man, it just right off the top of my head. It takes me to a match, and I know we probably get to this match here in a little bit, but, you know, Shinsuke Nakamura in spurts kind of shows some of that. I know we're probably going to talk about the Dolph Ziggler Nakamura match, which I have a few comments on, but he's a guy that can light it up when he wants to. And other than that, I mean, just really no one jumps off the page to me, because I don't get a chance to watch Raw as much as I'd like to, or SmackDown. I DVR most of them and try to cherry pick a few matches. But immediately, those few people come to mind.
Let's use that as a launching pad to talk about Shinsuke Nakamura, because, I mean, he has, you know, they're calling him the rock star. That's kind of, you know, the name they've dubbed him with. But I think it fits based on his track record in Japan and what he's done there. In NXT, he didn't tear it up as much as I think people thought he would. There weren't long lines outside of, you know, just regular NXT spot shows for him. And it does seem like there's something there, but there's something that hasn't quite clicked to the level that people who followed him in Japan thought it would have by now. I'm a huge fan of his. I still believe, I'm a little shaken in this spot, in this position, but I still believe that he will still become a phenomenon in WWE and not just be a guy in the mix. But I'm waiting to see kind of that breakout moment, and I'm not sure if there isn't damage being done to that. And one of my criticisms of this weekend, Backlash, was I was an advocate for Shinsuke beating Dolph Ziggler, who's mostly spent his time talking about his losing streak and how he hasn't, and, you know, he's a former world champion, but he loses a lot. Now, I was not an advocate for Shinsuke having a really good 15-minute match with Dolph, which is what he did, and Dolph's capable of it. I was an advocate for establish Shinsuke up front in 4 to 6 minutes as a dominant guy who's able to show off his rapid-fire, hard-hitting, state-of-the-art, strong-style offense, and really dominate and beat Dolph as a way to build anticipation for him facing somebody higher up on the card. What was your take on what they did at Backlash and Shinsuke so far?
Well, let me first of all go on record as saying I respect the hell out of both guys' ability in the ring. Dolph Ziggler can work his ass off, as can Shinsuke. Just from a match standpoint, the way it was presented to me, from what I wanted to see out of Shinsuke or this match in general, the match in and of itself had some really nice moments, and there's some nice sequences and beats and exchanges of offense and psychology. I just thought the sense of urgency and the pacing of this match was just too slow for what it needed to accomplish. And that's, hey, lighten Shinsuke's ass up and saying, hey, this guy's a player. He's a superstar. He has this charisma. But, you know, he's nothing like Muta or Kabuki from back in the days. And he can deliver that. He just doesn't do it enough. And a little bit too much of, no sense of urgency in the match, just pantomiming so many of the moves, drawing things out. I was like, wow, I was disappointed in that regard. If you look at the match in its totality, how they put it together, nice match. But I just thought, you know, Dolph needs more malice behind his offense. But to the point of Shinsuke, boy, you know what he can do. He just doesn't do enough of it. You know, that, and he panders to that crowd. And, hey, the crowd came for him. When the match was over, they gave him a standing O. So maybe I'm the only guy that thinks this. And then the Chicago crowd, which is off the charts 9.5 times out of 10, was truly appreciative of the efforts that they put forth. Again, I was critical of the match in and of itself. A good match, you could say, but did it accomplish what it needed to as far as lighting Shinsuke's ass up? No, and I think that's on him, and I think that's on whoever helped him put that match together.
Do you on Raw on Monday, I don't think you saw this, but they did an announcement of everybody who would be in a match together, and Shinsuke's standing, Tuesday on SmackDown, and they, Shane announced the Money in the Bank competitors, and Shinsuke was standing in the ring with the other wrestlers who were in the match for a long segment, and it was just kind of weird, like Shinsuke just standing there as everybody else kind of took turns talking. Shane would talk, and it felt strange. It's like, you know, second graders lining up for the drinking fountain sometimes when a bunch of wrestlers stand in the ring, they all face the hard camera, and they all take turns talking. And I don't think that's great for a number of guys, but I think it really jumped out to me that it was awkward for Shinsuke because he's just kind of standing there making, you know, weird facial expressions, and it didn't work. I don't think that's something back in your time on top, Steve, that we saw much of, which is a group of wrestlers coming out one after another, and then all standing in the ring together taking turns talking. It felt more spontaneous and more natural. Is that something that you've noticed that jumps out to you as something that they do now that they didn't do back in the day? And does it jump out to you as kind of a negative for the wrestlers in terms of portraying them as outlaws? Because it's sort of like, stand on this X in the ring and wait your turn.
Man, to me, it just doesn't work. I mean, you've got too many guys out there, too many, you know, explosive elements that something's got to happen, or the guys just kind of look weak. And yeah, man, like whether he's making faces, I missed the segment. I've got a DVR'd, but you know, obviously, it sounds like he was uncomfortable with it. He should have been pacing back and forth, you know, like a long-tailed cat in a room full of rocking chairs, or in an aggressive nature. I mean, yeah, I can't define the kid's gimmick, but yeah. When you have that many guys out there standing and not doing anything, hey, you know, you got to take care of that business. But you can protect the guys a lot better by not having putting them in that position. It just sounded, you just listening to you explain it sounded very awkward to me.
Yeah. And I mean, I know it's kind of WWE's way of doing things. They've got this top segment they got to fill at the top of the show just to establish what they want to do later in the show. And it set up a tag match later with Shinsuke, teaming with AJ. I mean, it's a means to an end, but I just think it's time to relook at that. And part of, you know, I was reading the 20 years ago back issue of the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter that talked about the Raw that aired 20 years ago this week, and it just jumped out that even in just reading about it, it's a term I like to use, but the term outlaw. I think that WWE, such a corporation, Vince McMahon told you that on your WWE Network show, you know, Steve, it's not like it was back in the day. We're a publicly traded corporation. Things are different now. It's sports entertainment, and it does tone-wise come across too much that the wrestlers now are employees, actors, well, not technically employees, but you know what I mean. They're working for a corporation that's there to entertain people. And in your day, it was maybe the Attitude Era. It wasn't just about middle fingers and cleavage and all that. The Attitude Era, in part, was, I think, about the way wrestlers carry themselves in the sense that the promoters had trouble hurting all the wrestlers because they were all outlaws. And now it sort of feels like everyone lines up in a single file line for drinking fountain time and does what they're told and reads the script properly, and they hope the fans are entertained. Does that strike you? I know you're not unbiased in that sense because you loved and had a big part in what you did back in the late 90s, but does it jump out to you as much as there's a lot of things that I think they do better today than they've ever done, production-wise and a lot in-ring wrestling on a consistent level has some real advantages, but that aspect of it, I feel like there's not that sense as a fan watching that these are outlaws who are hard to control.
Well, I mean, you know, you're classified as an independent contractor, but, you know, back in the day, you were a pro wrestler, and right. you happened to work for a professional wrestling company, and so it was a little bit of the Wild Wild West, and God dang, you had so much creative freedom to go out there and go out on a limb and get yourself over, and the fact, I mean, you know, hell, it's still live TV, but, you know, there was that other option of a place to go, and everybody's so micromanaged these days. The office has so much power over the guy, other guys. And the office always has some power because they're the ones that are employing you, and they're the ones that can tell you, hey, man, you know, we didn't like that. We're going to have to catch you down the road. But I just think everybody's walking on eggshells, and I believe that to be a total shoot. The office is just has so much power on these guys. They're telling them exactly what to say, what to do, what line to step on. And so, and to go back a little bit, there was plenty of times back in my day in the Attitude Era where you had a bunch of us in the ring, but guys were looking at each other, guys were pacing back and forth, and you thought that anything could happen. And that was guys protecting their gimmick, because there was many times where there was the same setup. I could have been out there with, you know, DX, Triple H, Road Dogg, and Billy Gunn. Taker might have been out there. Some dangerous elements and guys, alpha males that would want to go at the drop of a second. You got to conduct business, but guys got to be in that ring protecting their gimmick, staying in character, and doing something so they don't come across as a robot, someone under the control of the office telling them exactly what to do, and they can't be caught with their thumb up their ass. So, again, you know, part of that goes back to the boys, but the office does have a strong hand in that. So it does feel different. It doesn't feel as spontaneous.
Is there something that a wrestler can do in today's atmosphere as you understand it? This is kind of what I think you were trying to get across to Dean Ambrose in your much-talked-about WWE Network interview, is within the parameters of today's setup, is there a tangible way to explain some little things or some big arcing things that a wrestler can do to seem more independent? And maybe that there's a couple examples of guys you think tap into that right now on the roster, either in NXT or WWE.
Man, I just think it's owning the ring. Once you step in that ring, you have to own the ring in any situation. You know, whether obviously the office is always in control, but you just have to be in protection mode. And I tell people this all the time, you know, when I'm talking to them behind the scenes, you have to protect you. You have to protect your gimmick. And so, yeah, there is a way to do it. For me to sit here and just explain it, it's easy. It's for me, it was more easier done than said. It's just being totally in character, and it's stone cold. When I went out there with the BMF walk, I mean, it was 120% shoot to me from start to finish. Yeah, it was the work, but I believed. And so I just think as long as you are in character, you believe in yourself, you protect yourself from other people, create distance, you know, look, be Larry. Not everybody's going to be on DEFCON 5 ready to go. I'm not saying that, because then you'd expose yourself to that degree. So it's a real tricky balance, Wade, and it's just something that if you're savvy enough and you take on the business or learn the business to, you know, the nth degree, that you'll figure it out. Even in today's situation with the office having all the power and telling all the boys what to do and really taking away some of that creative freedom because you've got to be so produced, there is still a way to do it.
All right, we're going to go to our first break. If you're just joining us live, I think you recognize the voice. Stone Cold Steve Austin is my guest here on Interview Thursday, May 25th, 2017. When we come back, we'll hear from more of you and more from Steve. We're going to talk about NXT TakeOver, Backlash, and what happened 20 years ago on Raw between Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin in the build-up to their storyline together, which was one of my favorites that Steve did. So we'll get some of Steve's memories on that. But first, we'll go to a break, and we'll be right back after this. If you're like me, you've got a list of your favorite podcasts that you listen to throughout the week and also your favorite websites that you listen to throughout the week, but they don't always overlap. But in the case of PW Torch, they do. We hope not only will you listen to the PW Torch livecast every day, but also visit pwtorch.com every day for the latest insider perspective, breaking news, TV reports, live event reports, live pay-per-view coverage, exclusive editorials, and a wide range of other features. Check it out every day. It's mobile-friendly, desktop and laptop-friendly. Stay up to the minute, stay up to date with pwtorch.com. If you've been listening this week, you know that we just launched our first VIP sale since January of this year, only our second sale of the year. You can get a full month of PW Torch VIP membership for just $1. All you have to do is go to pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. We also have a headline on pwtorch.com with a $1 sale announcement. You can click on that too if you want. But go there and click on the sign-up form. And when you get to the coupon code, the promo code box on the bottom of the sign-up form, just enter MaySale17. All one word, no spaces. MaySale17. And you get $9 off a normal $10 monthly subscription. So it tallies up at just $1 to get a full month of access to everything that comes with the VIP membership. 30 years, almost 30 years, of Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter back issues dating back to the late 1980s. Week by week, contemporaneous coverage of the biggest stories in pro wrestling. The rise of Stone Cold Steve Austin in the Attitude Era. There was a headline a week or two ago in the Torch newsletter. Big headline about Raw making a comeback in the ratings and that the segments that Steve Austin was in beating Monday Nitro in the ratings. It was a harbinger of things to come, and it's really fun to read back. And I wrote the newsletters and put them together and edited our contributors' work, but it is a lot of fun to go back and read in real time as we didn't know what was going to happen next, our take on those things. You can lose yourself for a whole summer catching up on our coverage of different eras of wrestling, ones that you didn't live through, or perhaps the ones that got you, the era that got you into professional wrestling as a fan in the first place. We've got that covered. Ad-free access to our website, which is mobile-friendly and desktop-friendly. Ad-free access to this show, along with over 15 other VIP-exclusive shows per week. I am involved in probably 10 of them, and then we got about 5 others also in the mix every week. You can check out a full list of all the specialty podcasts, the daily news update that I do, and the post-pay-per-view roundtables and much more, all at pwtorch.com/govip. And yes, those podcasts, when you remember, are compatible with iTunes and popular podcast apps on iPhone and Android. So enter coupon code MaySale17 when you go to the sign-up form at pwtorch.com/govip. Steve Austin is my guest on today's Interview Thursday. Steve, I was looking over that back issue that I talked about from 20 years ago this week, and the main event was you teaming with Shawn Michaels, beating Owen Hart in British Bulldog to capture the WWF tag team titles. And you and Michaels were not getting along great. There was some trust issues there, but you guys talked about how you could work together if you had a common enemy. But that said, there was a point where Michaels went to kick Jim Neidhart at ringside, but accidentally kicked you. You didn't want to hear Shawn's complaints. He ended up brawling. Later on, backstage, Michaels yelled at you for not covering his back. What are your memories of that, of working with Michaels at that point in your rise in the rankings? And how important was that, do you think, in terms of the progression towards the breakout act that you were?
Well, anytime you're doing business with Shawn Michaels, it's very important because of who he was and what he meant to that company and what he had done before I got there. And I've always recognized Shawn as being probably the greatest in-ring performer I've ever seen. As far as the match goes, I don't really remember. I remember doing the match, but I don't remember the intricacies of the match or him super kicking me. But I will say that anytime we were doing any of that backstage stuff, in the locker room stuff, I mean, that was a damn near shoot. Just from, you know, Shawn's a total alpha male. It's me, total alpha male. And, you know, standing up for our gimmicks. You know, I was coming, you know, real hot down those railroad tracks, and Shawn had been there, done that. And I was kind of, you know, starting to overtake him, you know, at that time, you know, that we were doing all that stuff. So it was very competitive. Now, we were doing business, but there was a little bit of tension between us and doing all that because, hey, man, I'm trying to get to the top. I can see that maybe I'm rubbing this guy the wrong way by coming on like a, you know, locomotive that I was. But it was a great time. It was an aggressive period in the business. And I know the business is still highly competitive today. But, you know, back then you had so much more control over what you could do and what you could say. So there was a lot of shoot aspects to that work. And, you know, when you're in that dressing room and you're doing some of those pre-tapes or whether they're live or whatever, you know, you're going back and forth. and you're standing up for yourself. And it was a damn near shoot, Wade. We were working, but it was very, very real to us because Sean's protective of his spot. I'm climbing to that next rung on the ladder. So it was a lot of fun, but it was true tension.
I think that type of tension between two top stars behind the scenes is something Vince McMahon likes to see and even foster, as long as it doesn't lead to, you know, it helps keep wrestlers from getting together to take a stand against management if they're scratching and clawing with ruthless aggression to get to the top themselves. What do you think Vince McMahon thought of that? I mean, he had to be somewhat aware of that competitiveness, the fierceness between two top guys like you and Sean at that point.
I don't know that he really looked at it like that. I just knew that, given you know, the storyline, that we were totally invested, knew what we had to do. We were going to go out there and conduct business and try to further the story along a lot, but also, you know, try to keep, you know, our places in cement, or me try to take that next step. So it was just very competitive. And Vince is a very competitive person. If you ever get a chance to know Vince and guys back in the day, man, if you don't show that guy something or question him, or you know, develop a relationship, and it doesn't always have to be, you know, all hunky-dory, but he doesn't like people. Sometimes he has surrounded himself with yes guys on the management system, but as far as the boys, man, he likes alpha males that are going to go out there and try to kick, scratch, and claw to get to the top of the business. That's what Vince loved. And so when he saw that, I think he enjoyed that. And, you know, when I got a chance to work and feud with Vince, you know, he brought out the best in me and I brought out the best in him, just because of our intensity and our hunger to try to put asses in seats, make intriguing storylines and get these people to buy in. So I think Vince is one of the most competitive people I've ever known in my life. And you've seen what he's done with the business to make it as big as he has. So I think he likes that element.
I've always wondered this. I know wrestlers watch each other's matches, or should, and many of them do. And you always know when you're in the ring, you're performing for the fans first and foremost. But you're being observed by your peers. But is that different when you're in the ring in a tag team situation with a peer like Shawn Michaels? You talk about it being a shoot in the sense of the competitiveness between the two of you, and not necessarily remembering exactly the match on Raw 20 years ago this week, you and Michaels against Owen and Bulldog, but when you're in a tag match or working with somebody, is there a self-consciousness, like even with Michaels, like, you know, when you're working, he's watching you, and when he's working, you're watching him. Is it in the back of your mind that somebody you respect, like Sean, as a worker, is evaluating or taking notes on what you're doing to make a comeback or tease a hot tag or whatever it is that you're doing in the ring? Like, does that even enter your mind, or are you just kind of in performance mode thinking about what you're doing?
Man, you're in performance mode thinking of what you're doing, but anytime someone is out there, you're listening to what that crowd is doing while they're in there doing what they do. And if Sean and I, I believe we were working Baby, and Owen and Bulldog would have been the heel. So, you know, Heart Foundation. So a lot of times when I was tagging with The Rock, there came a time when Rock got really hot. So the natural thing to do, because he was really over, but also it was fun for the crowd to do, was Rocky, Rocky. Man, when you're in the ring and they're doing Rocky, Rocky, you hear that. You hear every single voice in that crowd. And so same thing with Sean. I mean, you're listening, you're watching, you're seeing what kind of damage he's inflicting, what kind of offensive moveset he's got. Dynamic. You can't keep up with him on that standpoint. So, you know, my de facto is stomping, kicking, doing what Stone Cold does. So I got to stay within my wheelhouse. Don't try to do, you're not going to out high spot or out finesse Shawn Michaels, but you're watching what he's doing. You're listening to that crowd, and you know that you have to, you know, do your end. It was like, you know, some old matches when I watch Arn and Ole, you know, working with the Rock and Roll Express, you know, just watching those guys, and they were true tag teams. But you try to bring out, you look at what the guy's doing, and you try to further the match along in the ring, but also, you know, get your stuff in and stay true to your character. It's a competitive element, Wade. Yeah. I can ramble on and on and on about it, but yes, to answer your question, I'm watching every single thing that guy does. I'm digesting it, and I know that I've got to follow up accordingly, and then I know that we're going to end up going to a heat spot. Someone's going to make a comeback. Anything you do, you've got to do to the best of your ability. You don't want to go out there and flub or screw up.
There was a quote from Michaels on that Raw 20 years ago. I wrote in my Raw report in the newsletter, Austin said he could coexist with Michaels if it meant taking something from the Hart Foundation, adding that he still doesn't like Michaels. Michaels said, I've got some news for you. Nobody likes me. You talk about it being a semi-shoot. I think there's a moment there.
Well, and that was me being in Stone Cold character. And Sean knew that he had a lot of heat in the locker room. And so as a baby, I mean, that was him totally being in character. It was a shoot, and it made sense.
It was a pivotal time for you that you and Michaels won the tag team titles. In the cover story in that issue, I said that by giving Michaels the tag titles with Austin, it was a sign that WWF had regained a certain confidence level in him, meaning Michaels, too. And so it was an interesting time for Sean, too, politically. And I just that's one of my favorite parts of the Attitude era, or the rise to that era and Raw's comeback, because it was an overlap of Michaels, who was a WWF guy. You were more than a WCW guy, but that was the longest run that you had leading up to WWF. And I think that was a pretty cool time that helped, I think, cement you in the eyes of fans as a top tier guy who could stand next to Michaels, who had been the top guy, and actually shine and stand out as good as Sean also was at that point. So it's cool stuff looking back at that era.
And it's always interesting to hear, you know, input from guys like you who watch and study the business and break it down, because, you know, while we're in the trenches doing that work, you know, a lot of things that you're saying, yes, they make sense to me now, but we weren't thinking about it as in-depth as you were, or like WWF, you know, trusting Sean more, or you know, hey, man, Sean's cool, let's push him again, or hey, Austin's coming along. Hey, I knew that rubbing with Sean was helping me out. I didn't look at it to the degree that you were looking at it and writing about it. I was just out there doing it, but it felt real. It was extremely competitive, and you believe me, that whole damn locker room, and hopefully it's still like that today too, as much as they can, is just fighting your ass off to try to get to the top. And if you get to the top, hanging on to the top.
And this, I got into this too in the cover story. I want to move on to some other topics too, but if VIP members or people who sign up for VIP want to do it, it's issue number 442 in the 1997 back issue section, cover dated May 31st, 1997. And part of the cover story is, in my reporting, was Michael showed up for his appearance on the May 19th Raw. And Sean's been open about this. This isn't even, not that it was out of school to report it if it was true, but Michael's been pretty open about this era too. I reported Michael showed up for his appearance on the May 19th Raw. This was a week before the show we're talking about. In no condition to be on camera. One backstage source said he literally needed to help to stay on his feet at times and needed to be pointed in the right direction when it was his time to go to the ring. Once he was in the ring, it was obvious to viewers Michaels was slurring his words and appeared to be having trouble getting through the interview. There was legit fear backstage Michaels might collapse on camera. I said Michaels was upset. He went from being the man last year to playing second fiddle to Bret Hart, and now third fiddle to Bret Hart and Steve Austin in terms of being over with a crowd. And he complained about having to choose Ken Shamrock as his partner on the May 19th Raw. So a lot of stuff was going on behind the scenes at that point that I think opened up the door even more for Vince McMahon to look at what was staring him in the face, which was Stone Cold Steve Austin is my guy. This is the guy I want to ride to get to the top, because Michaels wasn't, as he's been open about, not doing himself any favors at that time in his career. Go ahead, if you wanted to comment. I don't know if you do.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, so I was going to shift to tag team wrestling. This Monday on Raw, Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns in a similar situation. They're in a fatal five-way to earn a title shot against Brock Lesnar at Great Balls of Fire. I'm sure that's your favorite pay-per-view title, Steve, that you've ever heard, Great Balls of Fire. a lot of people snickering at that one. And they're fighting to get a shot at Brock Lesnar, and there was the same thing that happened to you and Sean. The mistaken where the heel ducks, and one babyface hits the other, it leads to disagreement. It's a tried-and-true way to build tension in a match in a situation like that. So it's fun to see history repeating itself, but with different players. So I want to get your assessment of where you think, because we've talked about them on your show and this one, your assessment of what you've seen in terms of progress on Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns, because I think they're right now in a better position than they were the last time we talked about it. I'm not sure that they're either where they want to be or should get to, but I think both in terms of how they're framed and how they're being booked have made some strides. Is that your assessment too, or are you still kind of holding out and evaluating to see where they go over the next few months?
Man, I like to hold out and see where they go in the next few months. You know, Roman Reigns, he's an interesting guy. I remember I was talking to someone about this yesterday who called me out of the blue. There was a time, I think it was when I went to the Staples Center to interview Kevin Owens some months ago here in Los Angeles, and they had just had a pay-per-view, and there was a moment in the match that Sunday, and as I was there on Monday, I had got my iPhone and I had videotaped my television for like 20 seconds. And it was Roman Reigns firing up and showing fire. And I was like, I didn't get a chance to talk to Roman that day, but it was like, man, I just wanted to show him this, what I captured on my iPhone for 20 seconds. I was like, you know, he's like that volcano. You think he's going to erupt. You think he's going to erupt. Maybe some smoke comes out, but it never really erupts. He kind of erupted during this match, and that was that excitement, that fire that I'd really been wanting to see out of Roman. I mean, true fire. And I just wanted to show it to him and say, God dang, dude, if you could do more of this, I really think those people would start, you know, believing in you, and you would just show them that fire. And I never did. So that's one of the things I just like to see out of Roman. I continue to think the kid has a bright future. Now, whether he can get to the he can get to the top of the ladder of the locker room that's in place, but getting to the top of the locker room or being on top of the card is one thing. Being a draw that crosses over and becomes, you know, like break room conversation, is a water cooler conversation. Hey man, did you see what Roman Reigns did the other day on Raw? Who's Roman Reigns? Oh, you got to watch this guy. Can he become that? We'll see. He has the potential to, so we'll see. With regard to Seth Rollins, I just, you know, I love that guy's work. He's a great kid. I just want to see just more definition of that character. And so I don't want to beat a dead horse because I've said that in the past. I think the kid's got all the talent in the world, but he's just got to keep working on that character or working on some explosion, even to the degree of what I just said about Roman Reigns. Just fire, real effing fire. And it ain't about hitting the ropes, ducking a couple clotheslines, and diving through the second and third rope on a guy. I ain't talking about that. I'm talking about picking a sumbitch off the mat and just beating the trash out of him. I know he's not the biggest guy in the world, but you just look at what AJ does when he has that fire, when he comes with that kind of that backhand and that chop and that other thing that he does. It's just like, that day he's trying to take your head off. If I can just see that grit out of Seth, it's like that match he had with Joe. Hey man, I don't need to see too many high spots. I don't need to see too many dives through that top, that rope. I need to see an ass whooping with hands and feet. So just give me that and define that character. Respect to both guys. I know they're working their ass off and they're doing the best they can. This is coming from a guy who made 15 years in the business and continues to be a fan of the business and wants everybody to make a boatload of money and have success.
One thing that I'm always trying to figure out, or that I'm trying to figure out these days, is because with Seth Rollins and Roman Reigns in particular, they're different than AJ Styles and Shawn Michaels in terms of Seth's sort of a hybrid. He's sort of in between the bigger baby face with, you know, and the smaller baby face who does high spots. But the question is vulnerability. How did you approach as Stone Cold, and perhaps how did that change over time compared to Stunning Steve and that kind of thing? Well, especially as a baby face, I guess, as Stone Cold. How did you factor being vulnerable in order to gain, I don't know if sympathy is a word from the fans, but make the comeback more of a crescendo for the fans, a climax for the fans, as a badass character like Stone Cold Steve Austin? Because I think Roman Reigns, and to a lesser degree, but somewhat Seth Rollins, they're not Ricky Morton, they're not Shawn Michaels, they're not just going to be flopping and getting sympathy from the crowd naturally that way. But how does vulnerability fit into the formula of somebody like you when you were a top guy?
Man, for me, vulnerability, and that's a great word, but you know that your opponent has to do something to hurt you. So to look at it from a textbook sense, Stone Cold was not a sympathy baby face, but the heel had to kick the hell out of me four times so I could make a comeback because, you know, if I'm going to dominate the entire match, you know, it's going to be a one-sided affair, and then we're going to do the finish, and then we're going to go home. That's not a good enough ride. You know, as you go back to some of the classics I had, like With a Breath, the Hitman Hart, or Rock, as a baby, you know, it was just got to do your part, do an active sell. And again, people cheered for me because they believed in me and they wanted me to make that comeback. They were tired of me getting my ass handed to me for the time that I was getting heat on me. But yeah, I was not like a Ricky Morton or like a Shawn Michaels, but it's just, I don't know how to compare it to what these two guys are doing. I would say, you know, as covered up as Roman is, he will sell. He will sell. I think he needs to be a little bit more active sell and sell a little bit more face up. I would have changed, as I look back at my old work now, there have been a lot of things I would have changed. So, you know, when I look at what I did, was it perfect? No, it certainly worked for me. My track record speaks for itself. But when I watch how I sold back in the day, I would have done a lot more face up. Positioning on the bottom rope, dragging myself around that ring, keeping an open target for that heel to expose the, you know, things that you wouldn't normally do in a real fight, but you do in a wrestling ring. So your opponent has a target, you know, open ribs, open gut shot, and then go belly down, position your ribs, you know, on your hands and knees for the guy to punt you. Anyway, I would sell, and I would sell willingly, gladly for anybody, but I wasn't a sympathy baby face. I was an ass-kicking baby face, and that's what the people expected out of me. To each.
We just dropped Steve's call, so let's go to a break. When we come back, we'll have him wrap up that point and continue with the show. So we'll be back right after this. Do you shop at Amazon.com? If so, do you know there's a way for you to support the PW Torch Livecast without doing anything different other than starting your shopping at pwtorch.com/Amazon? When you go to pwtorch.com/Amazon, click on the Amazon link and you land at the Amazon homepage. But anything you buy on that shopping trip, we get a commission for. It's a way to throw a few extra quarters, maybe a couple bucks in the tip jar as a way to say thanks for what we do here at the PW Torch Livecast. So next time you're about to shop at Amazon, don't type in AMAZ. Stop right there and type in pwtorch.com/Amazon. That's pwtorch.com/Amazon. A free, easy way to help support what we do here at the Livecast. Thank you. Also, don't forget our website, pwpodcasts.com, is free and available, waiting for you right now. It's not about listening to podcasts. It's about reading what was said on podcasts by wrestling personalities. We've got ex-creative team member Matt McCarthy's show, the latest edition, episode or issue, as he calls it, 194. They talk about Randy Orton's tweets and how writers handle injured wrestlers. That is at the top of the latest podcast report, the We Watch Wrestling podcast. Also, Chris Jericho with Jinder Mahal, a whole recap of Vince McMahon writing Jinder's promos. Jinder talks about that process, his attempts to become a hated heel, and almost joining Impact Wrestling. I bet he's glad he made the choice he did right now. Also, What Happened When with Tony Schiavone, talking about Fall Brawl 97, Kurt Hennig's turn. Edge and Christian's Pot of Awesomeness, talking about terrible gimmicks and a bizarre role Christian was going to play. Cheap Heat reacts to Jinder Mahal's big day, the charisma of Bret Hart and Sami Zayn, and is Randy Orton lazy? They address that topic. Written podcast recap of Colt Cabana's Art of Wrestling with D'Lo Brown, Jeremy Borash, Conan Blue Meanie, and Jack Evans. And a review of the latest Steve Austin Unleashed, a review of the latest X-Pac 360, the latest MLW, the latest Sam Roberts, the latest Eric Bischoff show, and more. Plus, news-making quotes from wrestler interviews on podcasts like Paul London, why he rarely watches wrestling these days, his thoughts on 205 Live, and how his Lucha Underground character was created. Also, Dunn reveals his dream opponents. Jerry Lawler recalls the night Owen Hart died. Ty Dillinger talks about what he learned since coming to WWE and how training for hockey is different than wrestling. I never thought those were the same, but I got to read the quote to see the context. Gerald Briscoe talks about the advice he'd give Roman Reigns, his favorite Stooges segment, ruining Vince McMahon's suit. And Goldust talks about his turn and what's up next for him, plus comments by Ed Nordholm from Impact Wrestling on the dispute with the Hardys, and so much more. So you're going to see, you can dive into that every single day. New posts, new podcast recaps, new newsworthy quotes at pwpodcasts.com. Mobile-friendly, desktop-friendly, bookmark it, create a home screen button. Visit it every day. It's there's some great content there. Andrew Socek, very active behind the scenes in making it all work, and we're very proud of the site, so I hope you will check that out also. Sorry, Steve. I hope you didn't take that personally. I accidentally hung up on you mid-sentence.
I guess I rambled too much on my dissertation of Stone Cold selling as a babyface. I apologize for rambling and frothing at the mouth.
That is so. I don't think I've ever done that. I just went over to move the mouse on the switchboard, and I like clicked accidentally, and I'm like, what did I just do? And then all of a sudden you went dead, and I'm like, of all things to do, I just hung up on my guest.
You're talking about getting the go-home cue.
That's right. I wanted to ask, I think the term used was do more face-up selling. Was that the term used? I was curious what that means. I'm not quite sure I grasp it.
No, just if you're down on the mat, you know, if you're in a heap face down, you know, the crowd can't see you, but if you're pulling yourself along that rope and then you go belly up, you've just given your opponent an entire target to stomp on, whether it's your knees, your quads, your gut, your ribs, your chest, foot on the throat. Just, and then as you position over, you kind of just, you're kind of rolling and tumbling and dragging yourself along. But even as you pull yourself up in a turnbuckle, you turn to, you know, face your opponent to give them a target. There's a lot of times where I would just kind of lay down, face down on the mat. It worked for me then, but if I were to go back and redo that again, I would be a little bit more face up so that crowd can see my face. That now you're not holding that to pose so that they can, you know, hey man, this guy looks like a model. We need to see his face. I don't mean it in that regard.
Let's talk about some NXT TakeOver from Saturday. I've loved the times that we've had. The opportunities we've had to talk about NXT shows, because I think there's so much about NXT TakeOver specials especially that harkens back to things that were done that I think, and sometimes I can't even put my finger on why, but they remind me of things that I loved about wrestling when it was approached a certain way and executed a certain way. And I feel like they still tap into that. On the TV show, I see it and hear it and feel it. But the TakeOver specials, it really does. I want to ask a big macro question. Do you still get that feeling when you watch NXT TakeOver, that it continues to have a vibe and a feel and a philosophical execution that's more reminiscent of things that are timeless but that were adhered to more in the 80s and 90s than are in the modern era?
Yeah, it feels a little bit more like wrestling than I used to watch. It's entirely different, but it does have a little bit more organic feel. I feel like for some reason, and maybe this is perception, I feel like those NXT guys are not being micromanaged so hard and have a little bit more creative freedom out there. And that might not be the case at all, but it seems to be that to me. Yeah. And I think the work over there is really, really good. And it's really fresh, and a lot of guys are innovators over there. So I really enjoyed. I watched both pay-per-views this weekend, and with respect to both rosters, I enjoyed the NXT pay-per-view probably a little bit more.
Yeah, I think I did too. What jumped out on the NXT TakeOver special? I got a few things I want to ask you about, but what stood out to you, good or bad, that you have something to say about from watching it Saturday night?
Well, I think this was the first pay-per-view that I'd watched where I actually heard Nigel McGuinness calling matches.
Ah, yeah.
And maybe he's been doing it for years, but this was the first pay-per-view that I can remember when he was calling all the matches. I just thought he had it's funny because when you have all these guys shilling products on TV, it's always the British accent that people think is going to sell the thing.
That's right.
It's funny about that, but I don't know. I enjoyed the way he approached it. I liked the way he was talking about the matches from a shoot standpoint, and especially, you know, during the UK Championship, that was an outstanding match. But from an ear standpoint, I enjoyed listening to him and the team call those matches. You can take me through the matches specifically one by one because I can't just name them off the top of my head. But just from a sound of talking about the matches and allowing me to, you know, suspend my disbelief and just purely watch as a fan, he was fun to listen to.
Let's start with the main event. Authors of Pain with Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa as their opponents in a ladder match. They went 20 minutes. Authors of Pain win. They pull the straps down from above the ring. And win. And then afterwards, the crowd, I mean, DIY were really over. The crowd really felt a strong bond, a strong sense of hope that they would succeed and win. In this era, and I hear the phrase, you know, kayfabe is dead. And I think kayfabe has always been dead and alive in various formats, just depending on, you know, the era. But I mean, when I was a kid, when I first became a fan, my mom said, hey, wait, the guys at work say that maybe this isn't on the up and up. And I didn't care. Just give me a show to believe in. Let me scream and yell and love my, you know, root for guys, boo guys. And I didn't care. And the wrestling promotion played it straight enough that allowed me to do that. So I think people who are younger today think that before they were fans, everybody were, quote, marks. Everybody thought it was 100% real. And it was only when X happened that people realized. I think it's been a gradual thing, but it's always been there. But what I saw Saturday night just jumped out at me with those crowd shots, the reaction to DIY losing. Just about every one of those fans, there might be a couple exceptions, understand to some degree wrestling is a production, not a competition to win matches. It's a production to, quote, entertain. But they were emotionally invested even before the turn. I thought it was magical, like from a wrestling context, that it was like fans reacting to the Von Erichs losing or the Rock and Roll Express losing, in that they were heartbroken, emotionally so invested in what they were watching that they weren't thinking about anything other than rooting for what DIY represented to them. And that made the turn all the more effective because they were so over as a babyface unit that by the time the turn happened, or when the turn happened, it was even more shocking. And I'll remember that as one of my favorite angles in recent years in terms, and the crowd made it. And the wrestlers and the bookers and the whole NXT production earned that moment. But the crowd was a big part of making that moment special. So that's, I've been gushing about that since Saturday night. Steve, your thoughts on that angle and the match too?
The match itself was okay. Now, those guys worked their asses off. The Authors of Pain are still on the green side, but I think those guys have bright futures ahead of them. Paul Ellering is one of my favorite managers of all time. I shared some time on the road with him and used to train with him, so I really love Paul Ellering. The match itself was, it was a good match, but a lot of times you see a seamless match where you don't see how everything was set up. This thing, you could see a lot of setups, and you could predict, and there was a lot of tails. But the guys worked their asses off, and towards the end, at the end of the match, those guys got a standing O from that crowd. So if the crowd loved it, more power to the crowd. And that Chicago was a great crowd for that whole pay-per-view series, and that match probably would have got over in any other arena as well. I can kind of see, you know, the things that I didn't want to see, but then so the match itself was fine. It wasn't great. Let's call it good.
Yeah.
Credit to DIY for carrying those guys and those guys doing what they could. Some of the stuff up the ladders was just way too slow. I don't need to go on and on and point out the obvious. But let's go to the heel turn. God dang. What I love about DIY is because, you know, just like I think it says on the back of the shirts, nobody's going to do it for you. Amen. And that's true in life. And so for those guys to capture that as a tag team, be two kind of, you know, underdog types, not the biggest guys in the world. Gargano, that white meat baby face. Ciampa, just that fiery guy who will not quit. These guys have leaned on each other and depended on each other all this time, you know, in their battles with Revival. And people believe in these guys. And they're a great tag team. And so they work their ass off, and they come out on the short end of the stick on this. And some that great chair shot on Gargano, that ladder shot, which I don't think was supposed to be quite that stiff. But I'll tell you what, that heel turn was just, it really shocked the crowd. I thought in my mind I wanted Ciampa to leave about a minute before he did for maximum effect. They had him perched up there kind of on the set looking down, almost like a buzzard or a crow, as Gargano laid there selling. It was, and Gargano was just totally out of it. It's like, man, what happened? I can't believe you turned on me, along with the physical devastation that Ciampa had inflicted upon him. And so I think from Tommaso's standpoint, he's thinking, you know, out of all this hard work we put in, you're constantly the weak link. I'm thinking you're the guy holding me down. Maybe that's, I haven't seen the rest of the story yet, but I thought it was outstanding. Hats off to Ciampa and Gargano for doing that. The match was average. It was okay. People can crap on me or say, hey, that was the match of the year. It wasn't. But the heel turn was magnificent.
And
if you looked at the reaction those crowd weighed when they kept cutting back to the crowd, people had their hands on their head. People had their mouth open. People couldn't believe it. I thought one or two people looked like they were about to start crying. They were shocked for a shoot. They bought in hook, line, and sinker. In today's day and age, 2017, with the business being a work, that was so emotional that it shook up those people. I loved it.
Yeah, I did too. And I think it's like exhibit A for why there is a benefit, even in this era, of playing it straight on television, playing it straight as much as you can in social media, mostly through exclusion. Just, you know, I don't want to see Ciampa and Gargano congratulating each other for a cool angle on Instagram or Twitter afterwards. It's not like this make or break thing, but I think it helps. It's one of those little pieces that adds to it. Just in actually, I think it was Tommaso Ciampa posted a picture of an empty room because they were roommates and now they're not. He's like, and it was like, you know, you're evicted. We're not, you know, this goes even further into our personal lives. And everybody's been kind of playing into it on social media, giving people a more immersive experience too, even though, you know, there's a wink and a nod to it for a lot of fans. I think it helps. So it shows in this era, there's a big payoff for, and you talked about the announcing too, Nigel McGuinness and Tom Phillips, and even their announcing, just it felt emotionally real to them. And I think the announcing is such a key part of it too. Mark Lawrence and World Class and Bill Mercer, but even I'd say more Mark Lawrence, but both of them were good at it, reacting to what the Freebirds did to the Von Erichs, reacting. The announcers of that era felt like they believed what they were watching was real, and it didn't feel like a scripted put on, and that added to it also. I'm glad you pointed out Nigel's announcing, because he's been doing that in ROH for a while. And I think he's really shining in the NXT atmosphere.
Was that the first NXT pay-per-view he has called? Because I hadn't heard him call matches before, and I do not watch Ring of Honor because I don't know what channel it's on. No disrespect to Ring of Honor. Was that his first pay-per-view as WWE?
I'm thinking he did the WrestleMania weekend one, too.
Okay, yeah, I don't remember. But anyway, yeah. It just stood out to me, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fresh. I thought because it was he treated it like a total shoot. I really dug it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so then Bobby Roode, Hideo Itami. Roode retains the NXT title. I'm a fan of Roode to a certain point, but I respect the hell out of him, and people whose opinions I respect who know more about working in the ring say he's like Triple H in the sense of he's always in the right place at the right time. He makes his stuff look snug without hurting anybody. Doesn't show light, doesn't cause injury, and you always know you're going to get, you know, a really good, solid performance out of him. And I mean, he's a pro's pro and all that. That said, I think he's the right guy right now, but I'm not sure he's the right guy 2 months from now to be the identity of NXT, in the sense that I think part of what NXT's identity is as a brand is giving an opportunity to somebody who hasn't been fully appreciated or framed in a, hasn't been given a chance to reach their potential yet. And I think Roode is kind of at his potential. And I like the Hideo Itami Robert Roode match, I mean, it didn't headline this show, but I'm not sure that Roode represents the spirit of NXT. And I think he's better either on the main roster or a second from the top heel in a very prominent role, but with something else on top. I don't know. But that said, I really liked the match with Hideo Itami, and I thought that it was a good performance from Hideo, who's been, you know, struggling with injuries and trying to get his footing in the U.S. Anyway, those are just some of my thoughts. Your thoughts on that match and Rude and Itami, Steve?
I thought the match was fine. And it turns out I like Bobby Roode as a babyface rather than a heel, because I think I was talking to someone, it might have been you the other day, who was saying that, you know, Bobby's showing more, you know, heel mannerisms. I didn't really see that. I thought the crowd kind of took him as a babyface for the most part, just because of the spectacular entrance. It's over the top. It's well produced. It, to me, it's just fun. And I want to like the guy because, you know, he's acting like such a prick. I think with his work, he's really solid, but he needs just one more gear. He needs just one more gear to, you know, whether it's a comeback, this, that, or whatever. One of the things with the match that I thought the people could have became more invested in it, because I thought the crowd got a little flat after the entrance, which is spectacular, was just the fact I don't watch NXT too much, so Hideo Itami really wasn't over to the degree that, you know, if Bobby Roode would have went out there with someone who was really, really over, the match would have been twice as much, you know, fun, or the audience would have been more engaged than what it was. And I say that with respect to Itami, because I guess he's coming back from a shoulder injury, but he just... They worked hard. I didn't think Hideo was as over as he needed to be for the crowd to really engage in this match. To be critical of Bobby's work, just one more gear on just whether it's offense or defense, sometimes just to speed up the pace of that match. But other than that, I think the guy's really solid. I don't know where I would say I would place him, whether it's the head of NXT or the, you know, top part of the card of WWE. I'm not going to decide that. I love the gimmick. I like the guy's work, and I like the entrance. I see him more as a babyface than a heel.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan because you're listening to the PW Torch livecast. There's a good chance you're also a fan of the UFC and all of mixed martial arts. And if so, we hope you'll check out our sister website at MMATorch.com, covering the news of MMA every single day with breaking news, exclusive analysis, an array of columns, live event coverage, flashbacks, and so much more. Check it out. That's MMATorch.com, or download the free MMA Torch app in the iPhone and Android app stores. That's MMATorch.com. And then we have Tyler Bate and Pete Dunne. The UK title match, regarded widely as the best match on the show. This was where I thought Nigel McGuinness really shined, too, because he knows that style. He was able to call it in a way that I don't think other color commentators would be able to. Two very young guys who Triple H has been touting on the media conference call that I listened to last week. I mean, he, you know, Hunter's just really high on these two guys, and, you know, two 20, 21-year-old kids. Your thoughts on what you see out of them, good and bad. Critique where they have room to improve, but what shines so far, and what you thought of their match on Saturday?
Man, I thought that was a damn good match. I can't really sit here and nitpick anything about it. I thought the guys told a hell of a story. They did some athletic sequences that made sense when they did them, and they were just spectacular. Both guys can flat out work. They're highly skilled technicians. I mean, the scary thing is these guys are only going to get better. I can't really nitpick anything about the match, although early on in the match, on a belly-to-back suplex, had the referee kept the downward motion on his swing, he would have counted Pete Dunne out, but he stopped the count about 4 inches before he hit the mat because the kick out was late. That's just a little thing, but he was damn sure down if the referee would have continued with that hand. But other than that, just the selling, the execution, some of the spots that they did just blew my mind, because I'd never seen nothing like that before. I can't say anything other than, but just two big thumbs up. These guys are incredible, and like I said, they're only going to get better. I love watching, you know, high caliber guys do good work or do great work. There was a lot of that in this match.
All right, I'm going to jump in here and let Livecast listeners know that Steve and I talked for about 20 more minutes, and we ran down Backlash. We talked about the comedy match with the Usos and Breezango and got Steve's thoughts on that match, which is very interesting. Steve's point of view on that. Also, his thoughts on Jinder Mahal's title win and what Jinder Mahal, what impression Jinder Mahal has made on him so far, and also where Baron Corbin is in his progress as a top guy. He turns heads in airports, but is he a money guy who's ready for the top? What are his thoughts on Sammy beating Baron Corbin on Sunday? So we got those thoughts, plus we got some email questions in. Asked about life in WCW in 91 with Kip Allen Fry and Bill Watts as vice presidents of that company. He shared some memories from that era. He talked about the importance of announcing in a match. He was talking a lot on this episode about Nigel McGuinness and his impression of him on the NXT TakeOver special. He talks about what announcing means to wrestling. Also, will Triple H let wrestlers go back to saying the word wrestling if he's in charge, whereas Vince McMahon pushes a whole sports entertainment thing? Steve talks about that and why he thinks the word wrestling applies and should continue to apply. Also, he asked about Canada. What are his favorite cities working in Canada? What are his memories there? And he shared some thoughts on working as a babyface in the United States against the Heel Heart Foundation, but then the next night working as heels against the Babyface Heart Foundation in Canada back in 1997. So some really good content. VIP members get to hear the final 20 minutes of the show. So if you're not VIP, it's even more of a nudge now, more incentive to go VIP for just $1. We do this on a pretty regular basis, having VIP exclusive after shows. We do this on a lot of interviews, and we do this on a number of our midweek flagship shows too. So let's go back to the actual very end of the program with Steve, where we wrap up. And then after that, I'll reiterate the way that you can go VIP for just $1, which will include the final 20 minutes of this interview with Steve's thoughts on the aforementioned topics. Here we go. Back to the show as it aired live, the closing moments. Steve, I usually do this earlier in the show, so I apologize, but can you plug your, I assume anyone listening to this knows about your podcast and is a fan of it and listening, but in case they're not, talk about how people can find your show, what it's all about, and anything, any other projects you got going that you want to mention?
No, man, you know, no projects going right now. We're fixing to go on the camera and start filming Broken Skull Challenge on July 21st. I'm looking forward to getting out and doing that. My podcast drops Tuesday and Thursday on iTunes at Podcast One. It's a free download. Tuesday's family friendly. Thursday's off the charts. I just got finished lining up Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows. They're coming into town when they come in L.A. here in a couple of weeks. And those are two of the guys I've been really looking forward to sitting down and shooting a breeze with. And they're coming up here pretty quick. I've got a couple other cool people lined up that I'm still working on. And proud to be representing Kawasaki Motor for the Mule Pro FX, Pro FXT, and FXR line, and my beer, my knives, all that stuff, you can find it at BrokenSkullRanch.com. Other than that, I'm done plugging.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it. Really enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for taking time out today.
Hey, Wade, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on your podcast.
Absolutely. That's Stone Cold Steve Austin. Check him out on Podcast One twice a week. Two different feeds, two different shows. You can hear me on it on occasion over at Podcast One. Also, just want to reiterate, there's a chance for $1 to go VIP, and that gives you a chance to go back and listen to my previous interviews with Stone Cold Steve Austin in our massive audio podcast archives. We've got shows dating back to the early 1990s, old retro radio shows that I hosted. That friend of the Livecast, John Arezzi, hosted Attitude Era shows with Jim Valley. We got our new shows every Sunday that drop called Wayback Playback, featuring Jim Valley and Pat McNeil reviewing older past wrestling events in real time. So they sync up their TVs and comment on an hour of a pay-per-view each week. So usually they are in groups of three in a three-week period. There's a complete pay-per-view that you can sync up and listen to their commentary, provide their insights and their quips and their analysis and their background on what was going on. The new Sean Radican-hosted show with a rotation of co-hosts is called WWE Future Past, where they spend 15 minutes on each of three wrestlers, one who's on the roster, and they talk about his indie roots and what they thought about him in real time as they watched him or her develop on the indie scene, and they pick out a match to analyze and talk about what it says about their potential at that time. And then two wrestlers who are not in WWE yet – but they think are prospects to get there. This week, they analyzed Kevin Owens as the main roster member, and then Jay White, who made an impression a couple weeks ago on the ROH pay-per-view, and Kyle O'Reilly, who was a headliner for ROH last year. And so they analyzed both of them. Jay White's on the beginning of getting indie acclaim, and Kyle O'Reilly right in the midst of his peak of having earned a lot of respect from fans who watch a lot of non-WWE products. So that's a new feature from Sean Radigan exclusively for VIP members. I'm doing afternoon news updates every day, Monday through Friday. So on your drive time home, you can hit refresh on your VIP podcast feed on your iPhone, Android device, or stream it right from our mobile-friendly, ad-free website. And listen to the news Monday through Friday on your drive home from work if you're in the United States, or well, I don't know if that's before you go to bed or when you wake up if you're in the UK or Australia. Plus, Ask the Editor features where I go in-depth on topics suggested by VIP members, and also in-depth reviews, just reviewing the show in case you missed it or if you watched it, getting my thoughts on Raw and SmackDown start to finish. Every Monday night and Tuesday night, those get recorded and posted for VIP members. Plus so much more. Check out full details. There's more than I could fit into a five-minute plug over at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. The coupon code to get $9 off. Just fill it out in the promo in the promo field when you are on the sign-up form. Just enter MaySale17. MaySale17 is the coupon code. All one word, no spaces. MaySale17. That gets you $9 off a VIP membership. You can apply that to a $10 one-month sub. You can also take $9 off the three-month sub or the one-year sub and save even more money right out of the gate. So check that out, pwtorch.com/govip. So, and for your full MMA coverage, check out MMATorch.com. For pro wrestling coverage, check out PWTorch.com. But most of all, go VIP. PWTorch.com/govip. Coupon code, you heard it earlier, and you know it now. It is MaySale17. MaySale17. Go do it right now. You won't regret it. Check out what we've been building for the last three decades. Dive into the back issues, the old audio, and new content, exclusive content, every single day. That'll do it for me. Thanks, everybody. Most of all, thanks to my guest, Stone Cold Steve Austin, for his generous time. And until tonight, after TNA Impact, when Mike McMahon and Andrew Socek take over the airwaves, and tomorrow at 7 Eastern, primetime Friday, with Bruce Mitchell and Rich Phan. As a PW Torch livecast listener, you've probably heard me talk about PW Torch VIP membership. One of the great perks about becoming a PW Torch VIP member at pwtorch.com/govip is access to vintage radio shows that are only available with a PW Torch VIP membership. The entire run of the Pro Wrestling Focus radio show that I hosted on KFAN in the early 1990s, over 100 episodes, available when you sign up instantly. Also, on an ongoing basis, we're adding more Pro Wrestling Spotlight radio shows hosted by John Arezzi in New York, which ran from the late 80s through the mid-1990s. These shows have not been heard since they aired originally on New York radio, and VIP members have access to listen to them exclusively as part of their VIP membership. Also, Total Chaos Radio, hosted by PW Torch Livecast Saturday Morning Wrestling host Jim Valley during the Attitude Era, are also part of a VIP membership, new ones added on a regular basis. These vintage classic radio shows with big-name interviews, guest analysts, including me, on a regular basis talking about the news of the day with the hosts, are accessible when you become a VIP member through our ad-free VIP website. You can stream them right on your phone or right on your computer, but also an RSS feed that is accessible only for VIP members via popular apps on iPhone, Android, and even iTunes. Check it out. It's a big perk that comes with a VIP membership. Get details at pwtorch.com/govip. That's pwtorch.com/govip. Have a blast listening to familiar voices from this live cast talk about wrestling from the 1990s through the Attitude Era exclusively as a PW Torch VIP member. Yep, and just a reminder, if you want to get those retro radio shows and everything else that comes with VIP, coupon code MAYSALE17. MAYSALE17, $9 off. Follow me on Twitter at TheWadeKeller. Follow our brands at PW Torch, at MMA Torch and at PW Podcasts. And once again, Wade Keller thanking you and signing off. This is life.